Thanks for listening to the Mornings with Carmen LaBurge podcast, made available thanks to support from listeners just like you.
Your daily encouragement that God has the world in the hollow of his hand. This is Mornings with Carmen LaBurge on Faith Radio.
If we're gonna fly, we fly like eagles.
Hey, good morning again. This is hour two of Mornings with Carmen on the Faith Radio Network. I am dedicating this segment to days that do not go as we have planned. There you go. There you go. Not every segment has a dedication portion, but this one does. I am dedicating this segment to days that do not go as we have planned. Have you ever had one of those days? Well, yeah, I had one of those days yesterday, a day that did not go as I had planned. So many... Cinnamony, my little rat terrier. Cinnamony got into it. That is the way I'm describing it. She got into it yesterday morning at about 2 a.m. with a coyote. So, you know, it's more than 24 hours ago now. Let me just go ahead and, you know, spoiler alert. She's going to be fine. She's not fine right now, but she's going to be fine. So she's little, as you can imagine. And so... she's really not big enough to take on a coyote. I think I should just maybe frame it that way. I tended to her immediate needs from about 2 to 4 a.m. yesterday. And then I did my usual show prep from 4 to 6 a.m. yesterday. And then I spent 2 hours on air with you. And then after that, Paul Perot and I did what we describe as the necessary post-show production. And then we did today's show prep and we had a meeting. And I took Minnie to the vet and I dropped her off and did some other things, you know, required of me at work. Did a little time reading in for today's show. And then I went back to the vet to pick her up and they had shaved around her visible wounds. They had taken x-rays to ensure that she didn't have any broken bones or any weird stuff going on. This is my, that's my technical language. They had run a few tests. They had loaded her up with antibiotics, and now they were ordering, you know, rest and ointments and doggy drugs. You know, she's going to be fine, right? She's going to be fine. But let me just say that babysitting a wounded dog was not part of what I had planned for yesterday. Babysitting a wounded dog required rearranging some things, rescheduling some other things, and leaving some set of things just undone. And I don't like undone things. I just don't. I'm going to go ahead and confess. I don't like undone things. I don't like things that I have planned moving on to the not done list. I have a get her done list. You got a get her done list? I have a get her done list. And I don't like having to move things from the get her done list to the not done yet list. It's just, it's no good for me. So all of this led me to, like, I literally like laughed out loud. So it's like, 3 o'clock yesterday afternoon, I am not doing what I had planned to do because I'm not having the day that I had planned, right? And instead, I am babysitting my wounded dog. So I've set up shop at my kitchen table where I can, you know, sort of keep her in a little observation area, tend to whatever needs she might have. And my 8-year-old granddaughter, Emma, who has autism, decided that instead of Matthew just getting out of the car after school, that she needed to come in because she was certain that I had ice cream. And so she should have ice cream. And so, sure, come on in. Let's have some ice cream. Because, yeah, this won't surprise you. I have ice cream at my house. And so then she wanted to color at my kitchen table. Now, let me just say, this is a visit that I did not have planned. Right? So on that whole didn't go as I planned day, there were some things that I didn't have planned, like caring for a wounded dog. But there were also some delightful things that I didn't have planned. I did not have a plan to sit for, I don't know, 90-ish minutes with my 8-year-old granddaughter at my kitchen table while she was coloring. And I now have a whole wall of very, very delightful bird pictures. I would not have had that time with Emma if Minnie hadn't, quote, gotten into it with a coyote and kept me sitting at my kitchen table doing what I could do from right there. The bottom line, whatever you have planned today is subject to change. I'm just going to go ahead and lay that out there right now. I mean, you already know that. I know that you know that. I'm thinking here about all the times that Jesus had a plan or his disciples had a plan for the day. And then, you know, somebody walked right into the midst of it. And they didn't end up having the day that they had planned, but God was directing their steps. So that's Proverbs 16:9. We make our plans, but the Lord determines our steps. Today may or may not go as you have planned, but it's the Lord's. This is the Lord's day. So consider that whatever plans you've made may or may not be aligned with God's plans. It's just that simple. God may have divine appointments set for you that are going to require setting aside the plans that you have made. And I'll confess, there's times that I'm just looking for God to sign off on my plans. I just am. But upon review, God rejects my plans because he has better ones. Sometimes that's difficult to see in the midst of it and to accept in the moment because I'm disappointed or I'm frustrated or I'm angry that my plans didn't pan out. Like it rained on my parade. So, what have you got planned today? How are you going to invite and accept the ways in which God's going to direct your steps? So I'm just going to invite you, as you step out there into the day that the Lord has made, I'm going to encourage you to walk step by step with the Lord, yoked to Christ, in step with the Spirit, walk by faith and not by sight, trusting God to direct your steps, even if that means you have to alter your plans. All right, well, the plan is for our friend Bill English to join us next. We'll see how that works out. You're listening to Mornings with Carmen. All right, the plan is that our friend Bill English from BibleandBusiness.com is joining us right now. Let's see. How's our plan working out?
The plan is working out fine, Carmen.
Hey, good morning, Bill.
Well, good morning.
Have you ever had one of those, the plan is, the plan has changed kind of days?
Most of my days go like that. I had, I think, I averaged between 24 and 28 appointments a week. Or meetings a week. And yesterday I had six of them lined up and four of them either moved or canceled for whatever reason. So,
all right. Four. Let's see. Yesterday was Tuesday. I don't know if you only had four on Tuesday, are you on track to have 24 to 28 in a week? I don't know.
Well, I had six. I had six scheduled and four of them moved or canceled or whatever. So,
Okay. Yeah. Your average has to be pretty high. Every day, if you're going to have 24 to 28 meetings a week. I don't know. That's a lot. Yeah, it seems like a lot.
It is a lot. And I don't wear it as a badge of honor. I'll put it that way.
I have a, it's blue. It's a ribbon. It's like an award ribbon. It's hanging right here next to my desk. And it says, I survived another meeting that should have been an email. And periodically, I move that award. I give myself that award periodically when I have to attend a meeting that should have been an email. I'm just going to go ahead and confess that. I'm confessing that right now.
Are you? Mm-hmm. Well, thank you for doing that.
All right. I'm so glad. I'm so glad you're here. Let's talk about hearing the voice of God while in the midst of making an ethical decision. So this is something you've got posted at BibleandBusiness.com. So if you're listening right now, you can check out Bill's entire piece on this, hearing the voice of God in ethical decision making. So I want to hear the voice of God in all of my decision making, but particularly when I am making, a quote unquote ethical decision. So can you talk about decisions in general and then how we hear the voice of God in the midst of making a decision that does require an ethical choice?
Yeah. So this article was written as part of a larger series on ethics, as you know, and I landed as a starting point on ethics of the two great commands, love the Lord your God with all your heart, soul, mind, and strength, and love your neighbor as yourself. And to take that would be the starting point, and then for all ethical decisions. And then the Ten Commandments will kind of flesh that out a little bit. So for a matrix of making ethical decisions, it was those two commands, and the second tier was the Ten Commandments. But I also didn't want ethical decision-making for a Christian to be strictly an intellectual matrix, right? And so the scriptures have just a truckload to say about hearing the voice of God. And so I didn't want ethical decision-making to be merely an intellectual exercise. I also think it's a dynamic spiritual activity where God speaks through his commands, speaks through the scriptures, and applies them in very unique ways to a person's given situation, and helps the person understand God's heart as well as God's mind when it comes to making difficult decisions in ethical situations. So your second question was, you know, can we hear the voice of God? My short answer is yes. The longer answer is in the article, but God has an audible voice, but the scriptures talk a lot more about his inaudible voice. So for example, in Psalm 19, the heavens declare the glory of God and the sky above proclaims his work. This is the ESV. Day to day pours out speech, night to night reveals knowledge. There is no speech, there are no words whose voice is not heard. Their voice goes out through all the earth and their words to the end of the world. So clearly the heavens are speaking to us, but it's not an audible voice. Another scripture here from Romans 1, 19 and 20, since what may be known about God is plain to them, them as are people who don't believe in God, because God has made it plain to them. For since the creation of the world, God's invisible qualities, his eternal power and divine nature have been clearly seen, being understood from what has been made, so that people are without excuse. Again, God is communicating about his eternal power and divine nature through the physical creation, right? But it's not an audible voice, but it is a voice that can be heard, and it is a voice that is discernible. And so can Christians hear God's voice? And obviously, to me, the answer is yes. And that is a voice that when our spirits are regenerated, we can learn to hear what the Spirit says. And if I can just go to John 16, I don't know if I have time before you want to do the break.
Yeah, sure,
here,
go ahead, man. Absolutely.
But in John 16, Christ is talking to his disciples, right? And he says this. He says, I have much more to say to you, more than you can now bear. But when the Spirit of truth comes, the Spirit will guide you into all truth. He will not speak on his own. He will only speak what he hears, and he will tell you what is yet to come. And he'll glorify me, because it is from me that he will receive, and he will make known to you. The Spirit will receive from me, and he will make it known to you. Again, that's not an audible voice that the Spirit uses, right? But the Spirit does talk to us, and he does let us know what is on God's mind and in God's heart. It's a spiritual activity. It's not bonkersness. It's not hallucinations. It's not delusions. It is a spiritual activity that only disciples of Jesus Christ will really understand.
Yeah, that is so good. The reality that God speaks through creation, so there's plenty of evidence. God speaks specifically in the scriptures of the Old and New Testaments. He speaks through the person and the work of Jesus, and we bring all of that to bear as we seek to hear God with ears that hear and minds that understand. Because I do think there's this huge difference between saying that I want to hear God and actually listening. Actually,
yes.
Like listening with ears that hear, and then with a willingness for to be brought into conformity with his will. You know, just to get my own will out of the way is sometimes very, very difficult when we hear God, particularly when there's an ethical decision to be made, and we know, we perceive what the will of God is. We just are resistant in terms of being obedient to it. So that's probably the second part, hearing the voice of God in an ethical decision and then actually obeying it. Like obedience is the right and righteous response to hearing the voice of God.
The more we humble ourselves before the Lord, the more we will hear his voice. The more we lift ourselves up, the more confused and the more noisy the spiritual world will become.
Amen. Amen. All right, we're going to continue our conversation with Bill English here in just a moment. BibleandBusiness.com, that is the website where you can not just read this particular piece on hearing the voice of God in an ethical decision, but the series on that as well, and tons of other great resources, including Bill's books. When we come back, we're going to talk about something that is happening in the culture in several states across the country. There are laws being changed in order to allow churches and other houses of worship to use their property in creative ways to help those who are unhoused. So how are churches engaging with homelessness across the country, and how are states setting aside laws to allow houses of worship to use their property in creative ways? That's up next here on Mornings with Carmen.
Thanks so much for listening to Mornings with Carmen LaBerge. Hey, I'm Susie Larson. Hey, if you enjoy what you're listening to here, would you consider subscribing to other great Faith Radio podcasts like mine? Search Susie Larson Live at myfaithradio.com or wherever you listen to podcasts. Hit subscribe and have a great day.
Our friend Bill English from BibleandBusiness.com is here with us today. Bill, in places across the country as diverse as Minnesota and California and other some other places as well, obviously homelessness is a terribly it's a terrible issue. It's growing. Just so many people are unhoused, and there are churches and other houses of worship with all kinds of property in the vicinity of folks who are homeless. So what are some creative things that states are doing to allow, you know, folks of goodwill to use those properties in ways that that serve the most needy in their communities?
Yeah, so both California and Minnesota have passed laws that allow churches to bypass most zoning ordinance, local zoning ordinances, if they choose to put up what are called tiny homes or build tiny home villages on their properties to house the homeless. And the thought is that these tiny homes will get the homeless people off the street, that it is more humane for them to be in a tiny home rather than sleeping on a street or in some dumpy car somewhere. And the idea is that once they're in the tiny homes, then county caseworkers can work with them to help them find permanent housing, right? On the face of it, what I like about this on the face of it is that the churches are starting to step up and say homelessness isn't just a government societal problem that needs to be solved. We think we can be part of the solution. And if there's any kind of common criticism I've had for evangelicals nationwide, it is that we have abandoned in many situations dealing with the poor because we know the government will step in and do it. So we're let off the hook, right? And what I like about this is that evangelicals can start to engage in meaningful ways. The other side of this is that some say it sustains homelessness. It does not really solve anything. The tiny homes are not the same as affordable housing, which, especially in California, there's just a huge problem of getting affordable housing for people. And that these tiny homes oftentimes don't come with plumbing, they don't come with electric, they don't come with any trash removal, they don't come with any furniture. And so, you know, what are you really doing for them? Well, you're putting a roof over their head, but then the churches are having to open up common areas of their churches on a 24/7 basis to give these homeless folks a place to use the bathroom, maybe to take a sponge bath, to use the kitchen so they can prepare meals and that kind of stuff. So I think the tiny homes, from what I could see when I looked at it, Carmen, I was looking at it as a transitional piece. We can get people into these tiny homes. Churches can build them. But in the long run, getting people into meaningful work where they are self-sustaining with permanent housing and their mental health issues are taken care of, maybe family relationship issues are taken care of, and they're becoming a contributing member of society, I think that's a much larger solution than just building some tiny homes on a church parking lot.
Mayfield, Kentucky, Nashville, Tennessee, Tacoma, Washington, San Francisco, El Cajon, California, St. Paul, Minnesota, Chapel Hill, North Carolina.
It's all over.
This is happening in places all over the country. So if you're listening right now and you're saying to yourself, hey, I know that my community is facing this challenge. I see unhoused people. I'm concerned about this. I also recognize that there are churches in my community with in proximity to people who are unhoused. This is the other part of this, right? It needs to be a church campus that's already in proximity to where people who are unhoused are choosing to live. And that is a difficult intersection of reality. And so just think for a moment where you encounter unhoused people in your community, in your city. And then I want you to think about a physical church campus that is geographically proximate already. Do they have a parking lot? Do they have an old ball field? Do they have, a portion of land that doesn't have something sitting on it already? And could that be a tiny home village? Transitional, again, as Bill says, we're talking about something that is designed to be transitional. It's not designed to be permanent. And in fact, even the suspension of zoning laws is not permanent. Most of these laws have sunset clauses. And so even the laws themselves are not designed or indicate that this is not designed to be a permanent solution. Yes, Bill. Uh-oh, did I lose him?
Right. You know what? Oh. The audio just cut out there for like 5 seconds.
Well, that's okay. I was just agreeing with you and reaffirming that this is not designed to be a permanent solution, evidenced by the fact that even these laws are designed to sunset.
But, I appreciate the heart behind the laws, and I appreciate the effort. And this is what, for all my politically conservative friends out there, this is what states do. They experiment with proposed solutions, and they find out what works and what doesn't. So hats off to some of these politicians for thinking outside the box and trying something new. I suspect there's going to be unforeseen collateral issues that crop up that we'll learn from. But I'm glad people are taking a step in this direction, and let's see how it goes.
I remember a conversation that we had with a church or a ministry in Texas related to this as well. So, yes, thank you to the person who said, didn't you talk about something like this with some ministry in Texas? Yes, Fishes and Loaves, maybe was the name of it, tiny house community in Texas, which is designed to also offer recovery, be a recovery community. This also links back, for those of you who've been listening this morning, this links back to the conversation that we had earlier with Jeff Bilbro about living in intentional community, the co-housing movement. How might a tiny house community on an empty piece of church property become an experiment of what it looks like to live in community with other people, maybe a recovery environment where then, from there, folks could maybe live in community in a house, in a neighborhood, and then from there live even more independently. I don't know. There's all kinds of ways to move folks along a process from being unhoused and homeless with whatever constellation of challenges they're facing to a life that is free from all of that and free indeed in Christ. So, Bill, as always, man, thank you so much for joining us.
Oh, you're welcome. Thanks for having me on. I appreciate it.
Absolutely. Transformational change. Have you found something that, is like a, like a lever for transformational change in your life? Have you heard of silent walking? I mean, first of all, silent walking just means like walking in silence. And We used to do it all the time. We used to do it all the time before 2007, when everyone ended up with a quote unquote smartphone in their hand that made us all dumb. Before the era of the iPod, before we thought you should always have noise in your ears all the time, everywhere, before the advent, and this is a little self-defeating here, but before the advent of listening to things all the time, everywhere, like podcasts, we did a lot of silent walking. The history of the world is a history of people walking silently from place to place. So silent walking. There's actually a movement among Gen Z. It was inspired by a TikTok influencer who says that this is an unintentionally started movement. She didn't intentionally start this movement, but she was just sharing how walking silently had changed her life and how walking with no distractions, no AirPods, no podcasts, no music, just me, myself, and I is what she says. Now, I would say, you know, walking silently in the presence of the Lord changed her life. Getting to a place of quiet and silence changed her life. How far did you walk yesterday? How many steps did you take? You probably have a step tracker. Are you walking silently with the Lord? Are you walking every step with Jesus? Are you walking with God in the cool of the day? Do you recognize that Jesus is walking with you in the wilderness or in the desolate place where you find yourself? Maybe you're walking through the valley of the shadow of death. Do you recognize that he is with you? Are you walking with Jesus? Think of all the places that Jesus walked and all the conversations he had with people along the way. What would it look like to spend some silent walking time today with the Lord? Jeff Allen is going to join us next. And I happen to know that silence is something that he genuinely values. I've heard him talk about how the enemy uses ambient light and endless noise to wipe away God's influence in our lives. You may know Jeff Allen as a Christian comedian, and he's going to join us next to just talk about his experience of dramatic transformation. That's up next here on Mornings with Carmen. Jeff Allen is joining us now. You can check out his website and from there all his social media, jeffallencomedy.com. He's here to talk with us about his book, which, because he's not a writer, it's even funny for me to say that. Aren't We There Yet? Or Are We There Yet? Not Aren't We There Yet, but Are We There Yet? My Journey from a Messed Up to Meaningful Life. Jeff, welcome to Mornings with Carmen.
Thank you, Carmen. I've been listening. Okay. This whole silent walking thing, I've been preaching that for years from the stage.
I know. So God tends to give a headline hook to pretty much everything. That's my,
right.
Yeah, the genius of our show, if there is any, is that there is a headline out there for everything. So we had a listener on earlier who's like, I'm having a hard time like getting my 20s and 30s in my Bible study to connect with what's going on in Israel. And I'm like, oh, I got a headline hook for that. Taylor Swift's personal bodyguard just got called up as a reservist. So there you go. There's your pop cultural headline hook to what's going on in Israel.
It.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
So how wrong is it of me to wish that Tammy were here?
Tammy's here. No, she's
so
not. She here, just said no. She just got out of bed.
So here's why I say that. So Tammy really encouraged you to write, and then now there's a book, and then I'm totally wondering, as other people are reading this, is Tammy glad you wrote it? Because man, the first six chapters, I'm like, this is bad. This is bad.
Well, it's interesting. I hired a guy to help me write a one-man show around the story. And he wrote a nice script. And we did a little table read at the house here with some friends. And Tammy hid in the corner and cried. And I put it down and I told him, what do I owe you? I couldn't not do this seven nights a week. I couldn't I just couldn't do it. And I tell audiences all the time, if you can get through the first six chapters without killing yourself, it's actually an uplifting tale.
It is, and, it is an uplifting tale. But I want to say thank you to her for her willingness to, like, let it be published. Because I suspect, right, there's a huge risk in telling your whole story in the way that you have told it in Are We There Yet?
Well, yeah, in this culture, I guess there is. It was interesting. I auditioned for America's Got Talent, and I got a call from the producer and said they passed on the audition. And initially, you know, I was a little upset. And then I thought about it, and Tammy even said, she goes, you know, with all the stuff that's out there about our life, it probably was cancelable, you know, if they decided to latch on to, you know, one or two things and run with it. It would have been hard to counter.
Yeah. So this is
I wanted to share, you know, to me, for men, you know, and I'm trying to reach, you know, men, that it's not enough to say, you know, I was an angry man, you know, I mean, there's a lot of men go, well, I yell and I do things, but to give an example or two of the way you treated the one love of your life, you know, it would resonate a little better with men. And then we were 30. I was 31. I got married at 30, so 31 when I got into recovery, and then I got saved at 38 or 9. So that's what the book covers, is that 7 or 8 year period. And I think millennials, certainly the ones that have gone to college, got their degrees, got their job, got the wife, got the house, got the thing, and they're sitting on their couch day after day going, is this it? Is this all there is? You know, and you know, I've done some interviews with some successful people, and they have said the same thing. You know, when they got successful young and thought, this is it, I've arrived, and then they realized, no, I'm still miserable, and things still aren't, you know, and Pascal described it as a God-shaped hole, you know, and I think as believers, we should know that this is not where we're meant to be, you know, and God expects us to show up every day and participate. And that's one of the things I, you know, at the end of the book, I write about the five questions, you know, what defines us, what do you value, what are your expectations, where does your hope lie, and what voices do you listen to? That is huge in a noisy culture. What you choose to pour into your heart and soul will come out in the form of the way you live. So it's important to pay. Again, I think it was Socrates said, an unexamined life is not worth living. So that's one of the titles that I played around with, was an examined life, because that's exactly what this is. It was just, there was a point where I just had to go inside if I wanted to change, because I was behaving in ways I felt like I couldn't control, and that's nonsense. You know, we all have, anybody who has children, you know, well, I didn't mean it, you know? So what you're saying is you have absolutely no control over your behavior. You know, I should forgive you because you have no control, and that's nonsense.
So we're talking with Jeff Allen. The book is Are We There Yet? My Journey from a Messed Up to Meaningful Life. And yes, we do have copies to give away today. You can text the word book to 877-933-2484. Jeff, you breezed through that history portion, got married at 30, recovery at 31, Christian at 38 or 39. And this this book is really like a journal. It's a bit of a journal of that portion of your life. And I guess I'm wondering, like, is there somebody riding around in the back seat right now asking you, are we there yet? And you want them to know there's no there until we get there.
It's in front of you. I think when I tell the story about selling the house in Arizona, and we were sitting at the escrow office signing the papers, and she said, I got bad news. The IRS has taken all the profit. And I looked around the table and I said, that's okay, because the only thing that matters in life is sitting at this table. And Tammy said, a couple of years later, we were chatting, and she said it was that moment that she realized that something had changed in me and that they were a priority. But, you know, friends, family, I mean, Ecclesiastes is my favorite book in the Bible because it was that verse, meaningless, 1:1, where meaningless, all in life is meaningless. And my heart leapt. I mean, that was my first introduction to the Bible. And it was my conclusions after 7 or 8 years in recovery that, you know, nothing mattered here. I mean, I couldn't get my head around anything that inspired me to, you know, brief moments, you know. But when he talks about, you know, basically what I got out of my first sermon in my life listening to was life without God will have no meaning. Without meaning to your life, there's no purpose. And without purpose, suicide. And we're seeing that everywhere. It's toxic to me to sit in an airport and look at two or three young boys or men just sitting in a chair looking at their phones with that look on their face. It's just this apathy. And is this it? Is this all there is? And it's like, no, there isn't. But you got to get up off your rear end and do something. You know, I had a sponsor give me trash bags. And I said, what am I going to do with these? He says, when you feel like arguing with your wife or you feel like drinking, you know, go pick up trash. And I go, why would I do that? He goes, just trust me. And he said, and here's the hard part. Don't let anybody see what you're doing because your pride will kick in and you'll miss the point. And it works. I mean, you know, a couple of weeks went by before, you know, I had all those stupid trash bags in my car. And then one day I didn't want to go home. And I just stopped at a 7-Eleven and started picking up trash. And you realize, I did anyway, that we're wired for two things, worship and service. And depending on what you worship will determine your service. And so I tell audiences all the time, you got to get up, you got to move, you got to volunteer, do something. We're meant to be in community and find one somewhere. And it's amazing how your life will change.
So I deeply appreciate that particular example because it doesn't require some, you know, me to go find some organization that's doing some good somewhere and, you know, go through some volunteer training process and sign up for a shift. I have trash bags and there is trash. Like, it's just that simple. I have trash bags and there is trash. And you can do that anywhere because there's trash everywhere. So
absolutely.
I particularly appreciate that, that example. You had spiritual questions. You just didn't have that kind of language. You tried a lot of things to fill that hole in your life. You were primed. I've heard you say this. You know, you were primed to hear what God says in Ecclesiastes about never getting enough. Can you just speak to the person right now who thinks that if they just got a better job, if they just went from $300 a week to $3,000 a week, that would be enough?
Certainly. If you're attaching, and that goes into where does your hope lie? If you're attaching your life to anything external, you know, Tammy used to shake me because, you know, we were losing everything and I just didn't care. But I said, what difference does it make? It could all go away. It could all go away in the next market crash, the next, you know, and you saw that in the 20s when the market crashed. People were, they lost their fortunes and they were ending their life. So anything you attach yourself, your circumstances will change, which means your whole life is in flux. I think it was Jean-Paul Sartre. Again, this is anecdotal. So don't hold me to it. I heard this from somebody, and
you're a comedian. You're a comedian,
right?
So we totally everything you say. We're okay. Like, yeah, I would might have to fact check that.
Great.
Go ahead.
I'm glad to hear that. So anyway, I was told Sartre said that if in order for something finite, which we are finite, to have meaning, it has to be attached to something fixed and infinite that never changes. Now he never said God, but that's it. You attach your life and your hope and your dreams to something that's fixed and never changing. That to me is Christ. That's what the difference was. Your circumstances will constantly be in flux, constantly. And that's why it's so important that you don't attach yourself to, you know, oh, I got a beautiful car, I'm a happy guy, you know, and then, you know, somebody plows your car, or, you know, they key it in a parking lot or something, you know. So, yeah, if you're sitting at home thinking more money, you know, obviously you got to make enough money to subsist, you know, to exist. But again, you know, my son came home, this is a number of years ago, and he lost his job. And he said, "Dad, I'm panicked." And I said, "Good, because that means you'll get a job." Mm. You know, and I told him, I said, my income doubled the first year I got married. And I told my son, we're wired for panic. Our DNA is wired for panic. So we're good. You're good. And 2 days later, he came home and said he had a job. But.
All right. We're going to take a very brief break. Jeff Allen is here with us. We're talking about his book, Are We There Yet? We do have copies to give away. You can text the word book to 877-933-2484. You're listening to Mornings with Carmen. Thanks for listening to the podcast of Mornings with Carmen. As you know, this is a rebroadcast of the live radio show carried on the Faith Radio Network. There's a lot going on at Faith Radio. Tons of free resources just waiting for you and for you to share with others at myfaithradio.com. How does that all happen? Well, it happens through listener support. So Faith Radio, Mornings with Carmen, all available because of listener support from listeners, well, just like you. If you're a supporter, thank you so very much. If you'd like to become a supporter today, just visit myfaithradio.com. And again, thanks for being a part of what we do every day at Mornings with Carmen. Jeff Allen is with us. Obviously, we have a lot of Jeff Allen fans because the text line is blowing up with requests for the book, but you can get in on that as well. Text the word book to 877-933-2484. The book is Are We There Yet? My Journey from a Messed Up to Meaningful Life. Jeff and I will both tell you, you got to get through the first six chapters because there is real transformation. There is real good news. It is substantive, but the first six chapters are crushing. But God didn't leave you there. You and Tammy are not the people described in the first chapters of this book. That is tremendously, that's a tremendous gift. Maybe we could talk a little bit about, I got like 50 things I'd like to talk with you about. You know, could you just tell us about your mom? Could you tell us about your mom and when she was in hospice? Oh, wow. Because I really have a hard time imagining laughing so hard in a hospice facility that someone would come and say, look, other people don't find this funny.
Right. Well, you have to understand our family. We're, you can't get through the kind of life we were raised in without a sense of humor. My poor brother really never had a sense of humor about his circumstances, and he was crushed his whole life, the poor man. But my sisters and I, we were sitting there, and we were just telling mom stories. You know, she reminded us of Edith Bunker, so that should say everything. She was a smart woman. She was one of the first in our neighborhood to go to work full time. As most of them were all housewives, they were housewives, and but you know, we were probably one of the first two income families in our neighborhood. And she had a very dry. She let so many things roll off her back. I didn't find out until she was dying that she was saved at a Billy Graham crusade when she was a little girl. You know, and it came from a devout. The peripheral families were all very devout believers. We were the black sheep. We were the family that everybody prayed for and said, bless their hearts. you know, we showed up to family reunions drunk. But my mom was she was the calm in the storm. She was the person everybody called to just get caught up with what was going on. And we did, as siblings, we didn't talk much after we moved away, but we talked to mom to find out how everybody was doing. And I remember my sister was son was getting married, my nephew, a couple years after mom passed, and I was down in Austin taking a picture with her, had my arm around her, and I said to my sister Vicky, remember when mom was in hospice and she was slipping into a coma and we all went in and said goodbye? And Vicky said, I remember that. And I said, I want you to know she told me I was her favorite. And the picture of my sister smiling, and it was the first time she was able to laugh after mom passed. So she was special.
I bring that up because it's not as if you live in the realm of some sort of silly humor. You live in the realm where humor is like a release valve. It helps us yes. in the midst of genuine difficulty. And so, I mean, that's what's one of the reasons that I wanted you to talk about death and specifically, you know, like losing your mom, because in it, there was all of this life and light and joy. And that is an incredible testimony and witness to the world. So could you just, for people who know you as a comedian and, you know, and love what you do, can you just talk about just for a moment, just the value of laughter?
Oh my gosh. I mean, for people who are non-believers that might be listening, you know, the scientific studies that have been done on it, all the healing, the body's endorphins, you know, which is the body's natural morphine. There's a feel good part of it. And again, I think a lot of it is just, you learn not to take yourself so seriously. You know, I heard when I first became a believer, someone said, when you die and get to heaven, God will ask you one question. While you were on earth, did you get the joke? And it's, again, just taking yourself too seriously. And it doesn't mean that there isn't a time for grieving. You know, I mean, for gosh sakes, it's important to grieve. It took me a long time to react to my father's death. I didn't know how I felt about it, you know. Mm-hmm. And I mean, I think it was months later I was in the garage and it's just washed over me, you know. Mm-hmm. And then to be able to, after that, to be able to tell dad stories and just, you know, laugh about it. So I was blessed in that I was able to be there with my mom. You know, I think that is it, you know, and say everything that needed to be said. And she told me, she said, don't you worry about this. She says, I'm tired. And I'm ready. She had fought ovarian cancer for 4 or 5 years. Mm. And she says, I'm ready, Jeff, you know? Yeah. And,
hey, so there were Jeff, moments. we gotta leave it right there. Cause we're coming up on a hard break
oh,
here.
But, leave it on death. That's great. Hey, you know?
Well, no. I want to thank you for being real. And I want to thank you for your humor. I want to thank you for all the laughter you've brought us in so many ways over so many years. And I want to thank you for just how real you are in this book. Are We There Yet? My Journey from a Messed Up to Meaningful Life. Jeff Allen is the author, even though he's not a writer. JeffAllenComedy.com is where you can find him. Give Tammy our appreciation and thanks for the vulnerability and for pushing you to get this done. And we're going to look forward to the stories of All in the Family. I think that, or maybe dad jokes. I feel like there are some books in your future. Hey, you've been listening to Mornings with Carmen. That is all we've got today. Join us again tomorrow. Have a great day and God bless. Thanks for listening to Mornings with Carmen LaBurge. Podcasts like this are available because of your support. If it's important to you to hear things that encourage your faith, click the link in the show notes to give now. And thanks.